Penguin Random House Audio presents The Book of Essie by Megan McLean Weir. Read for you by Tara Sands, Aaron Spencer, and Robbie Damond. And the king loved Esther above all the women, and she obtained grace and favor in his sight more than all the virgins, so that he set the royal crown upon her head and made her queen. Esther chapter 2, verse 17. Then Esther the queen answered and said, If I have found favor in thy sight, O king, and if it please the king, let my life be given me at my petition, and my people at my request. For we are sold, I and my people, to be destroyed, to be slain, and to perish. Esther chapter 7, verses 3 through 4. Esther. On the day I turn 17, there is a meeting to decide whether I should have the baby, or if sneaking me to a clinic for an abortion is worth the PR risk. I am not invited, which is just as well, since my being there might imply that I have some choice in the matter, and I know that I have none. I listen in, though, the way Lyssa and I used to before she went away. It was Lyssa who discovered the vent in the wall of the laundry room, who realized that you could eavesdrop on everything that was said in the production office if you climbed onto the dryer and put your ear up against the filigreed bronze gate. The winter Lyssa broke her leg, she was 14 and I was 9. I remember she chose an orange cast that Mother hated, and the doctor laughed and said something about Lyssa being a firecracker, and Mother frowned but didn't dare to disagree, not with the cameras rolling. I could tell she was worried that the color was too bright, that it would bleed on screen or at the very least be distracting. It lasted only a second, the withering look she shot my sister as the fiberglass was unwrapped and wound round and round the crack above Lyssa's ankle. But even at 9, I was well-versed in Mother's methods of wordless communication. I knew exactly what to look for, just as I knew to look for the flash of defiance in Lyssa's eyes that was my sister's only reply. The doctor signed the cast when he was done, and so did all the nurses. Then Lyssa and I were given popsicles for the ride home. They were orange, to match the cast, but Mother made us throw them in the trash as soon as we reached the parking lot. She said the sugar would ruin our teeth, but I think she really did it just to punish us, to remind Lyssa that she shouldn't count on the cameras for protection, that they might delay the consequences of her actions but would never entirely prevent them. She needn't have bothered. It was the first lesson any of us learned. That cast was the reason it became my job to climb up and report everything the grown-up said, because Lyssa couldn't do it herself without breaking the only good leg she had left. It's possible that without that orange cast, Lyssa would never have told me about the vent at all, since trusting me was a risk. She might have kept the secret to herself, ferreting away this little piece of knowledge the way she used to hide the chocolate bars she stole from Stahl's sweet shop when she stopped in with Beckett Twomey on their way home from school. Lyssa never bought anything, but Becca was allowed to spend her allowance on whatever she wanted. In any case, that was how it seemed. Lyssa and I, on the other hand, were allowed chocolate only on birthdays and Easter. I always wondered, after she was gone and I found the box of unopened candy under her bed, why she bothered to steal it at all, why she took such a chance. If she had been found out, it wouldn't have been only Daddy's paddle she'd have had to contend with. Mother's silent punishment would have been much worse. It meant something, I realized, that Lyssa could sneak the Milky Ways into her bag without Mr. Stahl noticing, yet never bring herself to open them. Eating the chocolate, I saw much later on, would have been the thing that made the stealing real. The dryer is running and slightly warm when I sit on it. It's a pleasant sensation, but the clang of some sort of metal clip getting thwapped against the drum covers up the sound of the producer speaking on the other side of the wall, so I turn the dryer off. Once the drum has stopped turning, I can hear well enough to make out what Candy is saying. The name fits her. Sweet as sugar, but hard enough to break a tooth on. She has been with us since before I was born. Since that first Christmas special when Maddie was not quite three and my parents had just been told that there would be no more children. Daddy had spent so much time on television by then, you'd have thought it would have come naturally. But Mother said he was as nervous as a pig in a bacon factory the day the new crew started filming. Up until then, the cameras had only been at church, where they were entirely under Daddy's control. Could he tell then that the balance of power was subtly shifting? In any case, Mother had to force Daddy to let the crew into the house, and even then, he did this thing where he scratched his wrist incessantly anytime the cameras were pointed at him. Candy's team did their best to edit this out, to use the close-ups of his pensive expression and his clear blue eyes. But there are a few shots where you can see him moving his fingers back and forth compulsively, as if possessed, like an addict scratching at invisible bugs burrowing just beneath his skin. Mother stole the show, though, so it didn't matter. She cried real tears when she revealed their struggles to conceive, their disappointment. She was candid when she confessed that they had always wanted a big family, a brood, a flock to tend and raise up in his grace and light. After all, if children are a gift from God, surely Daddy was deserving of more than just a single blessing, since he had made it his life's work to speak his truth and praise his name even in these darkest days. She sighed and reached out and took my father's hand then, stilled it, and held it tight to keep him from scratching. With her eyes turned up to the ceiling, the tears welled at first, but did not fall. Then Mother looked directly at the camera and breathed something about accepting God's will, and those fat drops rolled right down her tastefully rouged cheeks, as if she had control over gravity itself. That hour-long special probably would have just been a one-off since Daddy said the focus should be on his ministry, not on his family. But on Christmas Eve, they found out that Daniel was on the way, and people called it an honest-to-God miracle. And there was no stopping after that. 9 months later, when my brother was born, 10 million people tuned in to see it happen. Not the actual moment, of course, but everything leading up to it. The praying, the hand-holding, the reciting of bits of verse. Then he was lifted, slick and shrieking and still streaked with blood. And Daddy let loose a heartfelt alleluia, and a regular television phenomenon was born. On the other side of the wall, I hear Candy say, "Are you sure?" To her credit, there is no judgment in her tone. None that I can detect, in any case. Her face might be an entirely different matter, but I cannot see it. I can imagine, though, the near silent signs of disapproval. The slightly downturned lip. The light tap of a perfectly manicured nail on the polished wood surface of the table. Candy has no children, after all. We are all the family she's got. It's possible that this feels personal, though I doubt she would ever admit it. I watched her repeat the test myself. This is my mother's voice, smooth and velvety and utterly composed. You would think she was discussing which muffin recipe she might bake for an upcoming church fair, parsing the relative merits of currants and pumpkin spice. She almost sounds bored. The words fall evenly from her lips, with a hint of a drawl that I recognize as an affectation. Like her modest light blue suit and single strand of pearls, this voice is something that has been carefully chosen, cultivated even. The vocal coach comes once a week on Tuesday mornings and stops by on an as-needed basis to deliver special lozenges if Mother's throat is sore, which is more often than you would expect. She is forever sipping tea with honey and telling people how exhausting it is, running the household all by herself since Daddy has to conserve his energies for more elevated pursuits. Except she doesn't really run the household. Candy does. But no one would ever dare tell Mother that. In the early days, when it was just Daddy's church services that were being broadcast, and before Mother herself was properly a star,
Sample complete. Ready to continue?